Good afternoon. I can see we're already walking as if we had somewhere to go. A little different gait. And of course, our minds are beginning to fill with where we're going next. Please come in. So this is the end of Floating Zendo's practice period. We have one or two every year, summer and winter usually, and end with a sesshin if we can. And the practice period begins 6 or so weeks before the sesshin, and then ends on the last day. So tomorrow will be the end of it. In practice period, we dedicate ourselves to really looking at our daily practice, giving it some deep attention and some effort to up the ante a little bit and find some new way of service or study, or some way of remaining very conscious and aware that we are practicing even as we live a fairly chaotic and frantic sometimes life. In Dogen's time, This practice period idea goes all the way back to Shakyamuni Buddha. That's where the moon ceremony comes from that we did last night. That was their communal way of gathering. And they gathered during the rainy season and practiced together, studied together, and did service together. So it traveled, of course, to China, and to Vietnam, and to Korea, and to Japan. And so what we've inherited is the Japanese version. Only it's very, very Americanized. If you read Dogen's description of beginning and ending the practice period, it's quite elaborate. Everyone gathers in the summertime, and there's a place to sign in, and there's a certain way to announce the signing in and a certain way to sign in. And then there's tea served at the beginning. And then it's very ritualized. It goes on for several days before they even begin to sit and walk and study together. And then at the end, instead of having a big party like we do and erupting into a lot of laughter and talk, they very quietly sign the sign-in place, they sign out, and they have tea again. And the tea is set up according to hierarchy, who is the oldest and who is the youngest, so it's all very, very formal. And we don't do that. But we do practice together somewhat more assiduously, and certainly at this point we have been practicing very hard. So sometimes we think that monastery life is sort of, if you go to the monastery, you're committed and you're there forever. But that's not the way it works in Japanese Zen, for sure, unless you are running the monastery or teaching there. You leave after your training and then come back for the practice period. And you leave to have a life. Many people go to the monastery to learn how to be an abbot of a Zen place, of a temple, though they're becoming few and far between. And some people go out to become pharmacists or school teachers. Coben's teacher was a teacher of English, high school English, though he practiced very, very hard and served his whole community. So we've been living a monk's life in a modified American kind of way, one that we can't take home with us and should not expect to deliver ourselves with the mind of Zazen into our family life. That starts a lot of fights with families. A lot of arguments come up because it doesn't compute. And it doesn't need to. What we need is a cogent way to live, and to live well and honestly. And if anything, Zazen should be teaching us that, as we see all the ways that we don't live that way. There's so much of how, when we sit and just look at the wall, many things come up that are quite unexpected. And it's very, very well to look carefully and to accept what we see. When Dogen started talking to his monks now and then, he would call them honored practitioners on the way. So I would like to call you all honored practitioners of the way. I find you very, very noble and respectable and respectful. He also suggested that you should wish to be serenely composed for your entire life and to practice the way without expectations. This is really key. We always talk about ambition in Zazen, advising not to come to the cushion with a gaining idea. But the same is true when we go out. The more of a gaining idea we have when we go out, the more ambition that we pour into our life, the farther away we are from the truth of things. Usually life is smaller than that. We live in a culture where fame and fortune is lifted up into the only way to aspire. It's pitiful. In my neighborhood, there are little houses with little families living in them, and a number of them are tearing down the little houses and building big ones. In America, bigger is better and more is better. And I think in our minds, Zen minds, those things are very much in the way of the way. The word orioki, the word for how we eat, It means just enough. Just enough. So we talked about not knowing in the beginning, and I think we will take our not knowing home with us. And understand that we ourselves are, as Buddha nature, splashed with mud and soaked with water, as Dogen said. We are not perfect beings. And even if we achieved fame and fortune, we would be not perfect beings. That's just part of ambition. And it gets very much in the way. So to allow the ordinariness of us is really important. Everyday life is the way. Practice enlightenment is the way. So when we sit, that is enlightenment itself. We don't have to look for it anywhere. So one of Dogen's suggestions about how to live in the world is to return to our work and know and understand well that in awesome presence and in the presence of awe, the great way is wide open. In awesome presence and in the presence of awe. That word is thrown around all the time, but actually, every single thing that we encounter, if we really, really encounter it, it's truly awesome. It's so awesome that science can't explain most of it. We like to think we know, even a piece of paper. Sure, because it's just paper. But that means we put a name on something that we are experiencing with our body. We're feeling it and seeing it and hearing it. What is this? It's awesome. The world is a wonderful place. And we're wonderful. We forget that. So it seems to me that self-respect is extremely important for everyone. Cats and dogs and cows and horses have it just naturally. They respect their life and they just do what they have to do. Carefully and mindfully and fairly peacefully most of the time, unless they're stressed by hunger. We too can be like that. Confidence and dignity. We don't think of dignity so much in this culture. We kind of slapdash around, and that's sort of part of the fun of it, is just to have lots of gestures and run around a lot. But if we talk about slowing down offers the opportunity to exercise some dignity in our life. which means to respect it. See it better, more closely, and more dearly. So, Carolyn talked about faith yesterday a bit, and I think that's what confidence means. I mean, I know it is in Latin. In Latin, con means with, and fidens is the same as fidelity. It means faith. So if you have self-confidence in yourself, you are cultivating faith. And not just in yourself, but you yourself are the whole thing. So you're allowing, as you live this, the whole thing to prosper. It will benefit everyone. That's why we practice. We don't practice just to shine ourselves up and get to be kind of perfect people. It's a very humbling practice. We live with confidence and with dignity and humility in order to make room for everybody so people don't feel so stressed around us. So it gives them some sort of confidence in themselves and a sense of the awe and really, though we don't talk about it when we go home, of Buddha nature, of this thing that we have no name for, that we experience as we sit, and that is us. We always often have the question, and it's a koan, over and over, which one is me? The Zazen person? Or the one who has to go home and take care of the kids and drive 25 miles every day and do all the things I have to do? Which one? This is a very deep question. Tozan left his monastery and was pondering this and came to a little stream and stood on the bridge and looked in and saw his reflection. He said, "Oh, I'm not it. It's me." So I will leave you with a quotation from a great Zen master. It goes, "If you don't become the ocean, you'll be seasick every day." Leonard Cohen. Now this sounds silly, but it's the truth of it. Please believe it. If you don't become the ocean, you'll be seasick every day. That's just a funny way of saying the same thing. You could say we're waves on the ocean. Very opinionated, emotional waves. Full of confusion. We're the ocean. So there must be questions. Charlene?
When you said, I'm not it, it is me, what does that mean?
It's a colon. You can't figure it out. But you can carry it around in here. And in here. And it will tell you.
Can you speak a little more about confidence, faith, and regards to oneself, how to cultivate that, you know, kind of, I have trouble being consistent, you know, even with self-care, whether it's exercise or rest or, you know, so I'm confused if you could maybe...
Well, Zen Master Hua once said, he talked about the wonderful all the time. He said, everything is wonderful. And he said, if you're full of greed, hate, and delusion, that's wonderful. And if you aren't full of greed, hate, and delusion, that's wonderful. So confidence is finding the wonderfulness in all your messy life. We live in the weeds. Mm-hmm. We're weedy people. And it's okay. It's okay to be weedy. That's not the point. The point is to find our wisdom and compassion in every moment as weedy people. Because the wisdom and compassion are a part of are us. Our essential us. So we can trust it. We can trust ourselves. Very important not to trust our impulses and our emotions and our ideas so much as just how it is to be in the world with others. Trust that. We need each other so much. We help each other so much.
Angie?
Yeah.
As we prepare to return to our regular lives, I feel as though as when I do my daily thing at home that I have a notion of my practice in the back of my mind just about all of the time. It's just sort of become something that is, I think, developed organically over a period of practice. In fact, just occurred to me right now, it's very similar to like when I'm hiking, I always have in the back of my mind watching out for rattlesnakes. Because the little nasty young ones will be under a bush right at the side of the path.
Yes.
And I found myself 3 feet over there many times without even realizing how I got there. When that rattle goes, that reptile mammalian thing kicks in. So, you know, it's like that. It's like a residual thing that's always kind of within reach. Whether I'm happy or sad or angry or frustrated or whatever.
Yes.
And two of the things that I carry with me are the notion that I read somewhere about how we should be like water that assumes the shape of whatever vessel it is.
Exactly. Yes.
And another one that I heard a long time ago, I don't even know how to remember how to attribute it anymore, has to do with the notion of unsame-same. Mm-hmm. And to me, there's almost kind of a yogic tension there, you know, how it's always the idea of union of opposites, you know, the yes. bottom half of your body's one way, the top half's going another. Because on the one hand, it seems like the notion of taking the shape of whatever vessel into which I'm poured is kind of at odds with the notion of unsame-same somehow. And I'm wondering if you might help me reconcile those two notions or ideas.
Well, consider Nagarjuna's suggestion that there's an invisible, undifferentiated middle. There's a between. The between is emptiness. You can't say. It's like that old Zen story of the two monks standing at the coffin. One of them asks the other one, alive or dead? Mm-hmm. And the other one says, can't say. I can't say. Our bicameral mind, as Carolyn says, always wants to go to one side or the other. And there aren't any two sides, ultimately. It's just our way of thinking. And that's why we talk about dropping our thought so that we can experience the middle. We can't actually talk about it very well, but we can experience it. But it means a sacrifice of our intellect, a sacrifice of our way of figuring things out and naming them. It's nameless. Oh, I will certainly do that. Thank you, David. I forgot all about it. Maybe because I'm scared. This is a little ceremony that Koban sometimes did after a session, at the end of a session, in which one by one we would approach him, the teacher, and do a bow, and then on our knees ask a question. And it really was up to any of us what we chose, what kind of question, from the meaning, what is the meaning of life, to, you know, why is your rakasu full of baby spit or something. I mean, it could be anything. But it often is a question that you haven't been able to quite bring yourself to speak about in some way. And that in this context, where we're all kind of close to each other now, and the teacher is close to all of you, that you can have a chance to share. Share your puzzlement. Or sometimes the teacher will answer a question and then it won't be good enough for the student. And the student can say, can you say more? Or, I don't agree. Or it can be a dialogue too. But usually it's just a question and a snap answer. Not a long, drawn-out essay. So that's going to be the drill tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I hope you enjoy it. I know I will. The last one I remember was when, many, many years ago with Coben, when I was extremely shy and very scared always to be seen in any way. And to do this was just a horrifying experience to me. And I did have a question, and I knew I had to go up and ask it. And I got up there, and I couldn't remember what it was. And I looked at Coben, and I said, "Where did the words go?" And he said, "Back where they came from." So it's like that.
Just to encourage someone who might have a question, and just to encourage people. My favorite memory of Shoshan was a young monk had a powerful sesshin, and he came up to the whoever the head monk was who was doing it, and he said, "Isn't it wonderful?" And the monk said, "No, you stink." So you can be frank.
Anything goes.
Well, that brings the memory of Blanche, the first time she did one of those. Yeah. And I just started practice, and I went up and said to her, got down in front of her, and I said, "I keep feeling like I'm going to die. I kept thinking I was going to die during that sesshin." And she went, "Go ahead and die."
Bravo, bravo. That's the point. Ying?
I like what you said about honesty and sitting on the cushion, facing that.
Yeah.
Last night when I spoke about my own not having a deep commitment, and I said the word wasn't quite lying, and later you realized, I realized that the word was hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. That part of me really don't like my own hypocrisy. But mm-hmm. life is also built full of them.
It is.
And I strive to be honest.
Yes.
But it's very hard.
Well, we have to be somebody. We have to appear in the world and as somebody. And so we do have a persona. It's a mask. But if we think the mask is real, we're in trouble. And everybody else is too, because people tend to believe the mask if it's a really cool one. You can get in a lot of trouble that way too. But to know your own, that you're presenting yourself in a certain way isn't really hypocrisy. We have to work skillfully with what material of the self we are and trust that it's okay and keep an eye on it and just be honest about it, because sometimes we look a lot better than we are. Sometimes we look a lot worse than we are too. So I think we can't really control all of that. We just have to stay in one place with it and trust that it's okay, that this part is okay right here, right now. And how it happens out there is a swirl. It's chaotic and it's dynamic, and it's part of the whole universal dynamic that we really can't control. We can swim with it and dance with it, and some of it's a little hypocritical. We can smile when we don't really feel like smiling. Yeah.
follow-up comment about the stink. It was the smell of enlightenment that was extra.
Oh, thank you, David. The smell of enlightenment.
It's
when he said, "You stink." He said, "Oh, I'm one with the universe."
Angie, is that expression your original face? Is that sort of like the sinking down, nameless part of one without the hypocrisy or the public masks or whatever? Is that what that sort of points to?
That's part of it.
Can you elaborate?
No, that's a koan. It's the same as Tozan's.
Yeah.
What did he see in the water? Mm-hmm. Well, I want to encourage everyone to I knew I wanted to talk about going home because that's such a big subject for all of us right now. But I also want to encourage everyone to not stint on your practice right now. That we have a whole afternoon and evening and a whole early morning time to sit. And if you make the best use of that, it will help you very, very much. You're not done until you're done. So keep your focus on your cushion and on your practice until after the Shosan ceremony. Okay? Thank you.